Hello, and welcome to Be Creator, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the creator economy. I'm Alice Audley, and I'm the founder of Be Creator, formerly known as Blogosphere. Be Creator are the UK specialists in creator events. We run category-specific shows, such as the Beauty, Travel, and Health and Wellbeing Creator Show, which bring together brands, talent managers, and creators for a day of exhibitions, panels, presentations, and networking. And we also run the Be Creator Awards, our flagship event, which celebrates the best UK creators and creator marketing campaigns of the year. Last year's event had a reach of 179 million. If you would like to see some information about our events and how to get involved, head over to becreator.co.uk. Now, on to the show. Today on Be Creator, Serious Influence, I'm joined by Shane Riley, who is Vice President of International Sales and Marketing at Virgin Voyages, who are also our headline sponsor for the Be Creator Awards 2023.
My name is Shane Lewis Riley. I am the Vice President of International Sales and Marketing at Virgin Voyages, so the latest business of the Virgin Group, our very own cruise line.
And how long have you been with Virgin?
So I have been with Virgin now, it'll be 5 years this May, which has flown by because in that time we've of course had a couple of COVID years. But yeah, 5 years, it's gone very quick.
So let's go back a bit before these 5 years though. Can you talk us through a little bit more about your career background? What was your first job? What were your studies at school? How have you ended up here?
It's an interesting one because when I was at primary school, this was kind of the late 80s, early 90s, I guess. And back then, there wasn't really an understanding that people could learn differently, right? Children could learn in different ways. And back when I was in primary school, I didn't learn the way that, you know, the linear journey that they talked about. And really, I didn't progress in a particularly great way when I was going to primary school. And their way to deal with it was to kind of push me to one side and push me to go, oh, we'll put him in a little drama class and he'll do that. And we won't really teach him English and maths. And he's kind of a lost cause to a degree, which was great because it actually gave me my passion for performing and I wanted to do that. And that was great. When I went to high school, I got B's and C's, but never really set the world on fire. And then from there, I went on to do my A-levels and did well in my A-levels and then went on to study university. And from that impact that I had in my primary years, it impacted my decision at university. So I actually studied performing arts at university. I was like, I want to do something that I really enjoy. And that's really something I wanted to do. And then kind of I accidentally fell into travel because between my second and third year of university, I went to go work at a summer camp in America, which many people do and go to the whole Camp America job. And I absolutely loved it. And I thought, you know, yes, I went over there to do the summer camp part, but I got to travel a lot as part of it. And I remember being in New York on my own, being 19 year old, not even legal to drink in the US, and just wandering around New York on my own thinking, you know what, this is incredible. And I learned more about myself in those 3 months than I did in 3 years at university. And I thought, I want more people to do this. So when I finished university, I went into work for that particular organization of sending people to go do Camp America. As that happened, the job kind of was short-lived because they decided to relocate the office. So I thought, what do I want to do? And I went to go be a holiday rep. So much to the horror of my parents, I went abroad to be a holiday rep. My love for passion and my passion for travel. I then came back and worked as a travel agent and then loved the idea of working in cruise and then worked on the road as a rep for a cruise line and then worked my way up from there. So I go right back to the beginning because that very decision of, say, you know, putting me into kind of a drama group rather than teaching me math or English or whatever actually stimulated my thought process of what I want to do. And as much as it may seem very unconnected, the performing arts world and travel actually led me into a really unique space because I went to do Camp America to be a drama teacher when I went to do that. But then that connected me to traveling, which then led me on to loving cruise and then led me into where I am now. So It all is interwoven at somewhere or another.
That is very interesting what you've said about education. And I am hopeful from what we're seeing in the news at the moment that the education system is going to become more robust. But so many children can be sidelined and there are so many different forms of intelligence. And actually, I was reading Sir Richard Branson's article about that the other day because he has a charity, Strive, which is all about education and helping people. And his background, that he was like dyslexic at school and
sort of sounds a bit similar.
Yeah, so whilst I'm not dyslexic, he challenged the world to really think about dyslexia as being a benefit, right? And a way of a creative thinker. And reading an article about Sir Richard recently as well, he was talking about he didn't know the difference between gross and net.
And net, yeah.
And you think, geez, he's a billionaire. How do you not know that? So it took him a while to figure that out. But you look what he's been able to achieve. And I think I've been in corporations where it has been very kind of regimented and, you know, you're expected to be super corporate. And I think Virgin has allowed me, A, to be myself, but also to be able to ask those questions to go, I'm not really sure what that means and why is that important. And actually, it's the only organization I've ever worked in where we talk about the sailor, which is our passengers. We talk about that and their experience first before profits and money, right? Because the experience ultimately leads into being a profitable business, and delivering the best week of their lives will make the business successful. So all of our commercial conversations are actually all about the softer things rather than the actual monetary value. We talk about how do we make sure the experience is the best experience of their lives, which will then lead to, you know, that naturally leads into commercial success.
Mm-hmm. So when you were a travel rep and that then you got into cruising, what was your first experience of a cruise?
So my first experience of a cruise was a brand called Ocean Village, which it was part of the corporation that I ended up spending a lot of my career at. And the interesting thing about Ocean Village was it was probably ahead of its time. It was the first real cruise line that was the cruise for people that don't do cruises. And commercially, it didn't become a success because there was a lot of flight costs. And at the time, obviously, fuel and all that stuff made it very expensive. Probably not too dissimilar to today. But it was a brand that I enjoyed because it allowed me to take a cruise holiday without the fear that I wouldn't fit in, because it was a cruise for people that don't do cruises. So there was no formalities, there was no dress codes and all those kind of things. And ironically, I then went to work for some of the brands with some of the most strict dress codes and the most biggest formalities. But I just loved the idea of being able to go to so many different destinations. And the cliche of you unpack once and get to see loads of different ports of call. And I've been to places that absolutely loved and have then since gone back for a weekend break, or I've gone back for longer. I've been to other places where I think, actually, I've seen it. I feel like I've done enough. I don't need to go back. But it's allowed me to see way more destinations than I ever would. And, you know, the experience of just being able to have, to be able to just unpack once, but have, when you're traveling throughout the night, from port to port, you have incredible shows, incredible food. And then I spent a long time at corporations working for cruise lines, and then I was approached to come to Virgin, and Virgin was around how do we rethink something in an industry where we feel like it's become stale, or perhaps it's not offering the best experience to a passenger or a sailor. So that's where I came into Virgin, and that's where the excitement really stuck for me around this is a blank piece of paper, we can create something brand new.
So what year did you join then? It was 5 years ago.
So I joined before we had any ships, before we had any commercial partnerships. We had no travel agents partners at that point. I remember joining. I left a team of 30 where I was at another cruise line. I was leading a team of 30 there, and I became a one-man band in the UK. And my job was to raise the profile that Virgin Voyages is even going to exist. And we're now up to a team of 18 I have in the UK now. And we've continued to accelerate. Even in the COVID years, we were still accelerating. We were working on different projects. We were looking at different ways that we can accelerate some of the plans that we wanted to do. How do we bring all those plans forward? Which was a risky strategy, right? We're in COVID and no one really knew when it was going to end.
Because Scarlet Lady launched in the February 2020.
So she was actually, for many people in the travel industry, the last event that they did before COVID. So she launched in the February. And the funny story was, she came to the UK. We did an event in Dover. Then we did an event in Liverpool. And as the ship was sailing from Dover to Liverpool, we kind of got the murmurings that something was kicking off. And I was the person that was, I didn't want to stop anything that we were doing. I wanted to go full steam ahead with all the parties, all the events. I remember sat there and with our CEO, the decision was being made that we were going to start postponing some of the events. And I said, this is ridiculous. In 3 weeks' time, we're going to look back on this. This will be over in 3 weeks' time. And I was often reminded of that when we were like 18 months in.
Yeah.
Like, Shane, do you remember when you said it'd be over in 3 weeks? And I actually got off the ship in Liverpool because I've got a young son, so I wasn't going to be able to travel for so long. So I came home and I said bye to the crew. And I was like, literally, I'll see you in 10 days. I'll see you in New York. And I didn't see them again for 2 years. It was quite a fundamental change and a pause to our journey. And I think we got through that. And the change now is the fact that we've got ships coming so thick and fast. We were meant to have an 18-month gap between ships, which allows us to build up our client database, and we get those repeat sailors. And now ships are coming kind of 6 months apart, which makes...
How many ships do you have?
So we take delivery of our ship 3 and ship 4 later this year. So in May, we will have Resilient Lady joining the fleet. So she's aptly named because we named her Resilient Lady during the pandemic to demonstrate the resilience that we all had to endure during that time. And then we have Brilliant Lady, and she will join us in December. So another 2 ships this year. So it's quite full on, because every time you deliver a ship, you then obviously have a huge increase in capacity. It's a bit like, a hotel opening 4 hotels in such quick succession. It wouldn't normally happen, right? Unless you were a huge organisation. So we're having to scale everything quickly.
Did you still take bookings during the pandemic, or did you put stuff on pause? And then how did that work with...
Yeah, no, we still took bookings. It was still very much business as usual in terms of looking ahead. Reality is there was very little bookings, right? The pause stopped on new bookings. We were... One of the things I'm very proud of as an organisation during the pandemic years is we really took care of all of our partners. So from a travel agent perspective, it wasn't their fault that things were being cancelled. So we were protecting their commissions to try and, you know, help keep them afloat, because we knew we would need them in the future. So it didn't benefit any of us. For every time a travel agent failed, it was bad news for all of us. And then when it came to our sailors, the most important one was making sure that they felt that, you know, by keeping their money with us and rebooking in the future, they felt like it was worth it, and they felt like we'd really taken care of them. So we actually did an industry-leading 200% future voyage credit. So we essentially doubled their money. So if you booked a cruise with us pre-pandemic and you were willing to move it till the time that we actually could sail, we would double your money. So for many people, it meant they could book another sailing free of charge, or for many people, they upgraded to suites and were able to kind of splash out and splurge a little bit more once we were able to sail. But for me, being able to take care of our partners was a key thing. And whilst it was a big financial cost to us, it was the right thing to do. And it's paid dividends now, because we've had sailors that have come back to us time and time again because we took care of them. And we've had travel agent relationships that have accelerated because we took care of them. And the old adage of, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And we really did. We really stood by them at every opportunity, kept the communication going. So that was my biggest learning from the pandemic is, you know what the right thing is, and doing the right thing will pay, might cost you in the short term, but it will pay dividends long term.
So in terms of where your bookings are and now, are you on target? What are your sort of marketing strategies? You mentioned do most of the bookings come through travel agents, or is it like TV ads? You see a big uptick, or how do you monitor? How does the mix work?
It's about a 50-50 split between people who choose to book direct and people who choose to book through a travel agent. We have a very strict approach that it's fair across every channel. So we want to be the best we can be in every channel. So if a sailor decides to call us and book, they can do. If they decide to book online, they can do. If they decide to book through a travel agent, they can. There's no channel that is cheaper than another. In terms of being able to raise the profile of the brand, we've had some learnings, right? So naturally, when you launch a brand like this, and launching a cruise line is not like launching a hotel. We're essentially launching an entertainment business, a casino, all the other elements that are on as part of a cruise ship, right? They're all part of the organization that we have to think about. So we looked at ways to be able to make the brand stand out. And I think early at the start of our journey, we were fairly naive in the fact that some of the things were picked up and talked about as kind of big hero messages. So we have a tattoo studio on board, and we had a drag show and all these things. And they became kind of the hero message, and they never were meant to be. They were just meant to be a differentiator to say, you know, we're going to do things differently, and we're going to do things the Virgin way. And if you love if you love flying Virgin Atlantic, or you love flying, you know, if you love other Virgin products, you're going to love what we do. Equally, if you've never thought of taking a cruise, you're going to love what we do, because it's probably more aligned to what you would get from a premium hotel on land than it is a typical cruise ship. So we started off with probably some very young demographic pictures that we were showing. So, and I think that led people to think, oh, Virgin Voyages is really an 18 to 30s type brand. And looking back, we never said an age. We always said for the young and young at heart. And for us, age was never an important factor.
But adult only.
Yeah, adult only. Yeah. So 18 plus, but it was never a mission to say it's 18 to 30s. As it's played out, our demographics are kind of 30 to 60 is our sweet spot. And our average age is around 45. So I think that's about 10 years younger than the average cruise industry. So yes, our sailors are younger, than what you perhaps find on other brands, but they're not as young as people perhaps thought. And as time has evolved, we've kind of really established a really strong platform for people to understand what makes Virgin special. So now we talk about Now We're Voyaging, and Now We're Voyaging allows us to dial up the different aspects of the experience. And what you'll find now is we very much dial up much more around the things that our sailors have told us that we excel at and what the reasons why they come to us time and time again. So food is huge. So we have 20 different eateries that are all included, which typically you'd either have a main dining room and then everything else is extra. We have 20 different places that you can eat with six dining rooms that are all included. So you can have a different experience every night. The service is incredible. We allow our crew to be themselves. So if they've got tattoos, they can show them. We don't make them cover them up. Yeah. It's a story to tell, right? We allow them to, we've got uniforms that they can tailor certain ways so they don't all look like they're all in, you know, the typical sailor whites and all regimental and formal. And one of the things that stands out from everything that we do, everything we've talked about to our sailors, our customers about, is that the fact that the crew have the freedom to be themselves is very obvious, and it sets the benchmark for the voyage itself. Because our voyage and our whole ethos is there's no dress codes. It's bring your authentic self and be your best self on holiday, right? You don't want to go on holiday and be told what to do. And for our crew, we allow them to be their authentic selves, which really stands out. So a long answer to your question, but our marketing is really dialing up those things that people have told us that we do really well on. And those things that they've told us are the most important aspects of their holidays. And it does resonate. We've got TV, radio, cinema advertising.
I was going to say, what channels?
We've got huge amounts of channels right now. So in the UK alone, right now, we're on TV, radio. We've been part of Six Nations Rugby. So we've been on the perimeter advertising around the pitch, which is new to me. So I didn't know anything about that. So we learned quite a lot about that. But all of those.
Who handles that? Is that. Do you have an ad agency?
So we do have an agency that we work with in each market. I've also got the head of international marketing that reports into me. Her background, she came from another Virgin company. It's interesting at Virgin because typically you probably wouldn't have somebody without a marketing experience leading international sales and marketing like I do. But my job is very much to be the helicopter and kind of removing barriers for the team to be successful. So the fact that I'm not the marketing expert doesn't really matter. And I think that's a unique approach to Virgin, where they actually go, if you can lead and you can get the best out of people, it doesn't matter whether you're the expert in that field or not, because you surround yourself by the experts. Mm. And I think Sir Richard would often talk about, you know, he's not the expert in any of the fields that he's probably created. He's not an airline expert. He's not a cruise line expert, but he creates people of experts around him. And I think that was a big learning for me, and especially moving into the marketing space. I was quite nervous about that, thinking, how much value can I add if that's not my background? And my team have been able to help educate me. And then my job is to make sure that they've got the tools that they need to be successful. And I remember sat there with my first ever marketing meeting, and they were talking about ATL. And in my head was, I'm thinking Atlanta. And I'm like, well, I think I'm talking about Atlanta. And I was like, what's ATL? Above the line marketing. I was like, oh, why do you say that then? I know what that is. But they were just abbreviating.
People love a good acronym.
Yeah. So the acronyms are there. So, and I had to learn that quickly. But a key learning for me is, you know, the higher up you get, I guess, the less you like to be the expert in every area. And I'd come from sales where I was the expert. I'd worked in on the road. I'd worked in operations. I'd done every sales role there was. So everybody in my team, I could confidently say, I've done your role. I know what it's like. I get it. But marketing was, you know, a step back to go, okay, what do I need to know? And how can I add value to you when I know you know more than me?
Yeah. So you mentioned the cinema, outdoor and TV. So Sirius Influence has a focus on the influence industry, creator economy. Virgin Voyages have done quite a bit of work with creators. How is that part of your marketing mix? And does that team sit within the UK or is that Miami based? And also just on that, you mentioned that you have a team of 18 in the UK. What's the team like in the US?
Yeah, so we've got 18 in the UK that are responsible for predominantly trade. Then we use our head office mothership in the US, which is just north of Miami. We have a much bigger team there. I think we're probably up to 400 or something now in the office. So we leveraged kind of the economy of scale of having those people. So the influencer strategy is actually managed from a head office perspective, but linked into us. So we are looking at other opportunities. We've actually got sailing coming up, which has been curated by our chief entertainment and lifestyle officer, Jennifer Lopez. We're looking at opportunities for that. So we did quite a lot last year, and we knew it worked for us. And I guess for us, you know, sometimes the influencer can be deemed as, you know, a swear word in some aspects. But for us, we've embraced it, and it makes complete sense for us, because when an audience sees somebody that they look up to or relate to, and they're not going on board to be a cruise expert, they go on board because they're a foodie, or they go on board because of the entertainment lifestyle. It shows another avenue as to why the experience relates to somebody that would go, I'd never step foot on a cruise. Because for a lot of people, they still think cruise, Titanic, formal, yeah, they don't realise what's quite there. So for us, it's been able to help make the brand famous. So it was a huge part of our strategy last year, and it will be as we continue to move forward.
So that using creators is really as part of the strategy about raising that brand awareness and brand sentiment, as opposed to like creating links and trying to get direct conversions. Like, how do you see influencers, you know, rather than performance to...
Yeah, so it hasn't, right up until now, I would probably say it's been more focused on helping make the brand famous, and reach has been the main focus. What we will start to evolve to is how do you, I guess, monetize that, right? It all comes down to how did both parties make that work. So we will be looking at ways, kind of affiliate links and all of those things. We have done a small amount of that, but I think there's a greater opportunity for that as we move forward. And we purposely carve out investment cabins, like we call it. So we purposely carve out space on the ship to allow us to do this. So we allow space for us to be able to put these content creators on board that make a huge part of the experience. And we've had a number of different organizations that we've worked with to do that. And we have had a number of different partners that we work with. And for us, it's not about, you know, celebrity and those names, because it almost becomes like it's fairly obvious that it's a pay partnership, and that makes sense.
It's more about relatability. Yeah,
I would say there is a unique spot for us, as that people have got for content creators that have got a uniqueness about them. So it might be somebody focused on body image, or it might be a foodie or something. Those are ones that become very interesting, because then the brand has a very different play on food and how we create food and how we create our menus and how we help our sailors to make healthier choices without them actually even realizing, and it's not impacting their quality and experience. Group fitness classes are included on board, for example, so health and well-being is huge. And that's one learning for us that probably in the earlier days, it was probably more focused on partying. And we have as many health and well-being spaces as we do party venues, so you'll see a much greater balance. And we've had a series of content creators on board recently that were kind of personal fitness trainers and those type of concept, and they come on board and run fitness classes and digital fitness classes, and they were broadcast from the ship. And I guess people then go, oh, where are you? Oh, I didn't know you could do that on the ship. And it's much more subtle than somebody stood there at the front of the bow of a ship going, look how amazing, how big this ship is. It has 20 plus restaurants and blah, blah, blah. Actually, it's more relevant to you because you can do what you want to do on board.
I think that's the beauty of creator marketing, though. You know, it's like your friends. So it's recommendations. It's trusted. How do you go about contacting creators? Are those direct relationships you have, or do you use agencies?
So some of them have come through kind of recommendations to us. So a lot of people in the team in the US have those relationships from past that have come forward. We've worked with a number of organizations such as Trending Travel that have been able to connect us to influencers. There's lots of different other ones that we've been able to connect. But what I would say is a lot of the relationships have come out of people just reaching out to us and saying, you know, this is what I do. And this is the angle I think could work. And we're open to those conversations. So I would say if anybody's listening that they think actually their audience might be interested in a premium accommodation, a upscale cruise model that is without the stuffy formalities, then I think then let's get in touch and we'll discuss an angle of how it might work. And it might be fitness. It might be other health and well-being. It might be yoga focus. It might be all around dining and how do we create this many meals from scratch every time? Because nothing is pre-plated. Everything we make on board is freshly made, aluminium. Mm. So how do we bring, you know, people who love that world and expose that to them so they can realise there's an opportunity with us?
Have you been pleased with the creative marketing that you've done thus far? And you mentioned that it's going to be a big part of your strategy this year. What sort of goals do you have?
Yeah, I think the key thing for us is allowing them the freedom. I think where we've had the most success, when we've allowed the content creators to have the freedom to be able to create. And we're confident, I think it was early days and we were still, you know, they were still fine tuning some aspects of the product and experience, which probably led us to be a little bit more directive in terms of the content, because there were still aspects that we were fine tuning. The entertainment, we launched straight after COVID. We still had restrictions on face masks, which we don't do now, thank goodness. But there were still things in place that we were having to deal with. So in terms of content, it looked a little bit more odd than the experience that we were portraying through our marketing. As we're in a world, as we've evolved, I think giving them the more freedom is where we've had the most success. And having a joint understanding and the reason as to the story that they're going to tell is interesting. And it's not us curating that story and telling them what to tell. It's around the angle. So, okay, so you're going to be focused on food, right? We can open doors to taking you to the galley. We can help you connect with our executive chefs. We can help tell the story for you so you can translate why we do things in a certain way. So, yes, having 20 different eateries, for example, is important, but creating everything out of minute means we reduce waste. So it actually contributes to our sustainability goals, because we don't have huge buffets where food is on display that you just have to bin at the end when it's not used. So there's lots of different stories. So we will work with anybody that is with us to help them understand the reasons why. And once you understand the reasons why, I think it then informs the content that they create. So that's definitely my learning of, let's tell them why we do some things and then give them the freedom to go and create. And I think when you can give people the freedom, you get the best outcome.
Mm, absolutely. It sounds like there are so many different creators that would be relevant to coming on board. What would you say is your favourite moment whilst working at Virgin so far?
Well, there's been huge amounts, right? Because we've delivered the ship. I think there's two big ones. One, we launched Virgin Voyages open for sale in Australia, and I was lucky enough to be on stage with Sir Richard, and I had to brief him beforehand and let him know what we were going to be doing and what the event was, etc. So that was kind of a pinch yourself moment that I never thought I'd get to do. So, but he's very cheeky, right? So before we came on stage, I told him that this an event, people had come quite formal. Some people had ties. He asked me if he could cut some people's ties off, because, you know, he loathes ties. So he did. I had a pair of scissors in my back pocket and handed to him, and he cut some ties on stage. He brought some people up. Once we took delivery of the ship and then we got the first fare-paying passengers on board, I said to our CEO that I would get a tattoo on board as soon as the fare-paying passenger steps on board, as soon as the first person steps on. And I did. And I know people can't see it, but I'm showing you now that I went and got my Sailing Forever tattoo whilst I was on board the ship. I was like, right, this is the moment I'm going to mark and always look on my wrist and go, remember when we like went through those dark times in COVID, and then when we actually turned that corner and got the first time we got some people on board the ship, that was the moment for me where I was like, these people walked on board and they'd waited 2.5 years for their holiday, and they were just as excited as we were. And we had all of our crew there. We handed them champagne and everybody was cheering just to get these people on board. And I thought, that's something that you will always remember. And it was something that we'd always hoped for. And in the kind of the darkest times in COVID, I think we all had those moments where we were like, when will it end? Like, when will we get this moment to celebrate? And that moment of, I remember their face very clearly, this family that came on board. And it was actually a multi-generational family. So it was their grandmother, there was their parents, and then their grown-up kids. The kids were 18. And just seeing them all come on board and all being together properly for the first time, I was like, this is just, unreal. And something that I'll always think, you know, I was very lucky to be there for.
What are your sort of predictions? What will happen to the cruise industry over the next 5 years? Is it only getting bigger, more inclusive, more diverse? You are the disruptors in the space. You know, do you think that your competitors, who, you know, would you say other cruise liners are your competitors, who've just carved out a new lane?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. So I think COVID in many ways, whilst it was obviously incredibly damaging for many industries, you know, for quite a long time, the cruise was the poster child for COVID. You know, it was almost like the cruise industry created this thing. Every time you turned on TV, it was a cruise ship that was in the news, and it was a cruise ship that was spreading it. I'm really pleased by the way that the industry has recovered, and not just recovered, but been able to demonstrate that we could get back to operating through in safe ways. And the cruise industry is incredibly regulated. So I think a lot of people didn't realise just the protocols that cruise already had in place. And throughout COVID, it was frustrating because we were like, we've already had these protocols in place that are now being added to the rest of the world. We already had those certain things in place. And the irony is cruise was the first thing to be shut down, but also the first thing to reopen. So during COVID, as we kind of recovered the latter half of COVID, you could cruise from the UK, but you couldn't actually fly to Spain, for example. So it was interesting how cruising came back so quickly. It's recovered very well. So because people who love cruise are coming back, we are finding that those people that would never consider taking a cruise before probably still wouldn't. But we've still got a section of people that we're interested in taking a cruise and they're trialing probably Virgin for the first time. So we do attract a big share of people that have never taken a cruise before, partly because I think there are less barriers to entry. So we don't have to worry about tipping. Lots of weird conversations that you would have about booking a cruise don't apply to us. So that does make life easier. For us, it's much more like booking a normal holiday. So you don't have to tell us what time you want to eat. You don't have to worry about tipping. So some of those barriers to cruising have been removed. Who are our competitors? Well, I don't really think it's other cruise lines, frankly. Mm. I think other cruise lines do an incredible job. And what other cruise lines have done is create a niche for themselves. So they may be focused very much on families. They may be very focused on high-end and premium. For us, we positioned ourselves between kind of the premium and luxury. So we think we're in a very unique position of being a more relaxed cruise line, but having the inclusions. Being adult only sets us apart. And being very focused on not nickel and diming. The price you see is the price you pay. We have reasonable bar pricing on board. We don't do things like we sell you at a low price, but get you on and everything's extra. So many things are included. And pretty much everything aside from paying for your alcohol is included. And then even then, the alcohol is reasonable bar pricing. I think our competitors realistically are the lifestyle brands of the world. So other hotel chains that are more lifestyle focused, they're the ones that we think our sailors would love. If they're staying at those properties, they would love us. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we'd take other people from other cruise lines. Of course we would. But really, it is the land holidays. So whilst cruise industry seems like it's suddenly got huge, then actually, you know, it's still tiny.
And so much
all the holidays that people from the UK, for example, all the holidays of people traveling from the UK, only 1 in 10 people are taking a cruise. So there's still a huge growth opportunity for cruise. So I think there's still a huge opportunity there. And I think COVID actually was a benefit to some ways in cruise from a sustainability perspective, because what it has done is accelerated the removal of old ships and accelerated those new ships. So brands still have new ships on order. Those new ships are still going to be delivered. But what it has meant is that a lot of brands got rid of old ships. Like, we don't have that because all of our ships are brand new. But some brands got rid of the old ships, which are more polluting. A bit like having an old car, right? They're more polluting than the new cars. So it accelerated that. So I think from a cruise industry perspective, it accelerated the evolution into new tonnage and new ships. So it wasn't all bad. There's some good outputs of COVID, ironically.
So my final question is, you mentioned earlier that you'd love to hear from creators. So what is the best way for a creator to get in touch with Virgin Voyages, should they wish to?
First step is to come through me, because I will then connect them to the right people, and we'll have that conversation of going, right, what are the opportunities and who is the right person depending on the type of content. There may be some different people to talk to as a result of that. There may already be opportunities that we can plug them into, where we already have dates and events that we're doing that we can plug them into. So I would say get in touch with me.
And via email or LinkedIn?
They can do via LinkedIn or via our social channels.
Would you like agencies to get in touch as well, or just creators direct?
Both. Get in touch and let's have a conversation. Of course, we might not be able to do everything, but if we can have that conversation and understand where the opportunities lie, then we will absolutely explore those. And this year is a special year because we have another two ships coming. So there's lots of new stories to tell. And if they can help us in ways to tell those stories, then that could be very interesting.
Do you have the dates for the two new ships?
Yeah, so I don't have the specific dates on me. I think it's the 16th of May, the first ship after this, the first new ship this year, third ship. She joins us in May, and then December, I want to say it's early December, then the fourth ship joins us. So the fourth ship joins us straight into the Caribbean, but the third ship is in the Mediterranean, which could be good for UK-based or European-based creators.
A big thanks to Shane for coming on the show.